Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders, being recorded in front of a special audience here at the Leicester Square Theatre in London's glittering West End. Now, as regular as this podcast won't need to be reminded, in ancient times, hanging gardens, great pyramids and other superstructures were celebrated as wonders of the world. Like days of the week and deadly sins, there are always seven of them. But what are the seven wonders you would put on your personal list? That's the question I ask my guest in this podcast and on stage here today. And the guest I'm asking today is the comedian, actor and TV presenter, Terry Alderton. I feel we're going to do a fitness video or something.
I know. For the podcast, you can't see, but I do look like I'm dressed as a football referee.
Yes.
I've come to keep order.
Because before you were a comedian or an actor, you were a professional footballer.
I was an apprentice at
South. No, you were a goalkeeper.
I was a goalkeeper at Southend United. I'd be tiny now. Yeah, I know, he's laughing.
Yeah, that's
Southend.
All right.
Made the big time.
Yeah.
Made the
no,
big
but
time.
But that still puts you way above 99%. I play football every week, but I don't need to play at that level. But it's unusual for somebody to be a goalkeeper and then become a comedian, unless you include Hugo Lloris. I don't know, but
the thing is with that, that's true, but it's I don't think it's that much different because you're the one in that one position on the pitch, aren't you? So it's like being the drummer in the band and all the other cliches, and then you know you're a comedian. So once again, I just kind of like burying my soul, I think, and making mistakes and going, oh no, it's me again. Because that's all that happens when you're a goalkeeper. You know, you make 15 fantastic saves and then you let one silly one in. Oh, Terry! And it's like, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. And then
but why did you become a goalkeeper? Because you were big?
Very good on pitch.
But nowadays, goalkeepers are supposed to be good on the pitch as well, which isn't really fair, is it?
I just think I was, I don't know, I just was taken in that way and that's where I played and remained there.
Yeah.
You know, Terry would go and go, all right, then.
Yeah.
I don't think I was necessarily the tallest in the school at that point. Although I did have a friend called Richard Lumsden as an actor.
Yes.
And he do you know Richard?
No.
Well, anyway, Richard Lumsden, he's lovely.
Or
Richard.
Yes, if that makes
makes
the anecdote. But, oh, Richard Lumsden, yes, go on, yeah. Yeah, Richard, Dickie, yes, Lummy, Dick Lum.
I haven't seen Dick Lum for a long time.
Yeah.
And he told me a story once because he wasn't say, so gifted with sport. It was more of a writer kind of thing, that kind of child at school. And when they would pick the players, you know, I'll have you, you'll have him. Yeah. And then what they would do inevitably, they'd go, right, you have Richard and we'll kick uphill.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be much funnier.
Yeah.
It's very funny when he tells a story. If you knew who it was. We should have changed that to someone else like Tom Cruise or something. That would have been hilarious.
No, he wasn't a goalkeeper.
He was not a goalkeeper. He would have been too small. Although Sylvester Stallone was a goalkeeper, of course.
Really? And he isn't enormous, is he? He's
No, but he was in Escape to Victory, wasn't
he? Yeah. But I mean, that's a work of fiction, so we're going.
I know.
Yeah. So I've asked you to come up with your seven wonders of the world.
Yeah, it's a funny one, this, because I don't know you what happens for people listening. You know, Clive kindly gives you your seven, and then you send them off and go, oh, hold on, I've got more now.
Yeah.
So I end up thinking, oh, have I picked the
right
thing?
Tied yourself down. But don't worry about it. It's not a document that's going to be held against you when you die and go to heaven.
Know.
You had as one of your wonders.
Don't know in this day and age.
Yeah.
The world we're living in now.
Yeah.
Everything's down on paper and flipping recording.
I don't think there's anything on this list just as a
oh,
thing.
Oh, you don't know yet.
Gonna get, I know. Something
you don't know where I'm going to
be cancelled because of it. Well, let's start with your first wonder, which is... Well, actually, just because we mentioned you're a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
We mentioned comedy. Yeah. But you're also an actor. People would have perhaps seen you in London's Burning and in EastEnders.
All the top stuff.
Yes.
All the top stuff. Yeah, yes. I've done a bit of an acting, but it was just by chance. I was in it. I had never watched... As everyone says this to you when you're in it as well. I never watched EastEnders, but... Someone, it's like funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It gets 10 million a week, but no one ever watches it. No one votes Tory either, but it's weird, really. Yeah. But quite obviously someone does. But, I didn't want to be in EastEnders, and Julia Cramsey, who's the, you know Julia? Jewel Cram. Yeah.
She used to be called Richard, but...
you're very good. I went up to do the Edinburgh Festival, and we would do... This is 10 years ago, crikey. Mm. And I did a show. And we did Shawshank Redemption.
Oh,
we did
yes.
a play of it. It was all comedians with me, and Omid played Red.
Yeah,
Omid Jalili. So Julia came up to Edinburgh and said, "Look, I need someone to play this part for Bianca, who's played by Patsy Palmer. She's like this mouthy redheaded girl in the show. If you've never, I doubt anyone in this crowd has watched EastEnders.
Oh,
right?
EastEnders, Bianca. So,
yeah, well, yeah.
yeah, yeah.
I still don't think they know what we're on about. But anyway, or they probably watch Love Island. No, but anyway,
you were on Love Island as well, weren't you?
I was on Love Island
in the background.
I was, it was unbelievable. I was a tree. So Julia Cramsey came up to Edinburgh and said, we want this part to be played by someone nice now, because they'd already cast this guy and he was going to go in and be another nasty character for her terrible misfortune. So they wanted a knight in shining armour. And so Julia came up and said, even though in Shawshank I was playing one of the sisters, which if you know the film, is not a very nice bloke.
Yeah.
But So she said, come and have a meeting with me. And I remember I took a spoon out of the cutlery drawer and I put it on the table when she sat down. We sat down. I said, that's for you. And she said, what's that for? I said, I'd rather poke my own eyes out with that than be in EastEnders. And then cut to the chase, I was then in it for a year. But I did actually quite enjoy it.
It's good work for an actor,
mate,
isn't it?
It was okay. Listen, mate, it was all right. I've gone back to it, haven't I?
Yeah, yeah.
It was good. Yes, it was good fun. I'm glad I did it. But I got the old tin tack in the end because Patsy decided she was leaving, so we all let it go.
Oh, no. You couldn't get a script that involved you staying somewhere.
No. I remember Dominic, who was the main man at the time, calling me up and he's going, oh. I said, right, where are my chips? He said, I'm so sorry. I said, you begged me to come into this thing. Now you're kicking me out. So it was a bit of a shame. But yeah, we left. But she went to LA, bless you. And isn't that funny? When the TV starts talking to you, you've got to worry, right?
Yeah.
I tell you this very quickly. I was laying on the couch once. I wasn't very, very well. And I was watching This Morning. Don't know why. I think my friend was on it. That's why my friend Sam Callis. You know Sam Kakaluka?
Sam
Kutka.
Yeah.
I sneezed and Philip Schofield looked at the camera and went, bless you.
Wow.
So obviously,
he has special powers.
He's
that
got
man,
special
yeah.
powers.
Well, he did have.
Anyway, I told him the story, and he didn't believe me. But anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
EastEnders.
No.
Yeah. So I went in it.
Yeah.
And London's Burning. That was good fun. But yeah, I've done various things. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's crack on with your wonders because we're 20 minutes in. We haven't mentioned one of them yet. But
I've had a coffee.
Yeah. Oh, that's. That's from way back.
It's 4 hours ago. Go on then.
So your first wonder is double-decker buses.
Yeah, and it's... now, straight away, when I put this down, I thought, of course, Johnson had all this, didn't he? I'm not as crazy as Johnson. But double-decker buses, not single-decker ones, but double-decker. And basically what it came from, when I was very little, my nan lived in Southend.
Right.
And
was she a goalkeeper as well?
She was a very good goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah.
My nan could have saved that. Yeah, she was brilliant. And
your nan lived in Southend.
So my nan lived in Southend, and the 29 was the bus that would take you from back out Leeway into Southend, and it was a double decker bus. It was 13'6" tall. It was 8 meters wide. Had 11 liter engine. It was a Leyland, and and I can still smell that bus. And I, yeah, so I used to go up and see the bus, 29 into Southend, and my nan would say, she would have the timetable, because we always used to get the bus. The 23, which was a single decker, I didn't like that, but I also knew we were going to go and play bingo if we were getting on that, so I wasn't happy. But if we
I wonder if you could give me just a bit more detail about this, because this is very sketchy. We're only getting the numbers of the buses and the bingo night.
It's all going to come. You see my app, this is how it works.
Yeah.
You're going, what's going on? And then there's a punchline. You go, is it?
Okay.
Anyway, so this is how I got into the love of buses. And MJ 296 was the number plate. And anyway.
And the chassis number was?
I haven't got the VIN number either. Yeah. So that was the start. That was the start of it, and then I started obviously making buses, and then I found this world of buses. My dad used to drive RTs as well, not the RTW, which is obviously the wide body one, which they brought out later on.
Yeah,
but
are we onto Routemasters?
I like the RTs, which were before, but I do like the Routemaster is a beautiful bus, of course. But the problem is, there was a lady saying to me, but I'm not sure if I'm going to stay, Mrs. Grimes, if she did. She said, "I'm not going to stay. What are your Seven Wonders?" And I went, they're interesting buses. Yeah. Anyway, so yes, I do like the route, but what I do also like to do is if I do get on a bus, I want to play with money, right? I got on a bus, and I know they like change, not that kind of change. So I gave the guy a £5 note. I thought it would be funny because I don't like that, do they? And the kid looked at me and he went, literally said, "Sorry, mate, you can't pay with money." Mm. And I went, "What?" He said, "You can't pay with money." Yeah. I said, "Did you say I can't pay with money?" And he went, "Nope." So you had to beep it, right? You have to tap it, right? So if you get buses, right? You people probably don't. You probably got someone chauffeured you here. I can see, I can smell these people. They're class. Anyway, so what I did was, on the second journey, I was going back. I literally, stupid as it is, I put my debit card, tapper card, I put it down the front of my trousers. And then when I offered him, he said, "You can only pay with money." I went, "Oh, right, you want me to tap?" And he went, "Yeah." And then I lifted up my crotch and went, beep, like that. And I went, "And that's just a tip." And that's that sounds like I've cracked a joke in there, but that was that's the truth. I did do that. And he didn't find that very funny, the guy.
No.
But, so anyway, I love what I like to do on a bus, and I'm really frustrated, is when the bus pulls in, and there were two people on the front windows. That's the problem to me, because I like to sit at the front. And I'll be honest with you, I still do make... I still do all the noises and everything. I don't think 20 milligrams is enough. But my point is... I love a bus. I love buses, and I love the smell of them, and I love everything about them. But night buses, maybe that's a different ballgame.
When I was a kid, I liked to double-decker buses, although they're always a good excuse for being late to school, because they were always late.
Right, what was your... because I was Eastern National. What were you then? What was your local?
It was London Transport.
I was in
the suburbs of London, and there was a number 18 bus, which is a huge, long bus route. In concert, it got all over the place. Cool. But what was good fun about buses in those days is the two things about it. You could get on and off, because there was no door. So if you're a school kid and you were trying to catch a bus, you'd throw your bag on and obviously risking death at every turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And in addition to that, you always wanted to go upstairs, and you could only smoke upstairs. So all the school children and smokers gathered upstairs while the smokers puffed tobacco fumes to reduce the life expectancy of the young. And we thought this was perfectly normal. This was just...
Well, that was the thing about... it was obviously a dangerous time for public transport. Because you had, obviously, the bus, you could jump off the back and face danger. You can go upstairs and face, obviously, disease. And obviously with trains at the time, when we were that age, you remember you could actually open the door up and try and jump off, couldn't you? At speed. Yeah. They were great days, they were. Yeah. Can't do that no more. Or you'd run alongside the train going like that, and everyone would go, "Come on, you can get on. And you get on and go, wouldn't it? Like that.
Health and safety gone mad wasn't it? Yeah, with doors on silly. Buses and everything.
Yeah,
but the double-deckerness of it is fun, because there's that little set of
I
stairs.
I just like the height, and even to this day, I still, if I see a bus and a lorry, there was a time where it would always be quite a competition who was the tallest, you see. They'd be quite on level paths, because a country bus is usually around 13 foot to 13.6. And a London bus is 14.6, but the new Routemaster is only a 14.4, but it actually comes down to 14.6 because it's got the... It's true, all this, right?
Yeah. So, Terry, have you worked all this out for the purpose of this podcast?
No, I haven't.
Or
I do
you
it all
have
the
this
time.
In your head, though?
Mate, look, I tell you, the thing is that then the post office bought out a new lorry and their trailers are 16.2. Most motorway bridges are 16.6, right? So they can just get under. You know now when you drive along, you see these massive trailers and you go, he's never going to do it. And they just get under, don't they? Well, that's nearly 2 foot taller, two and a half foot taller than a double-decker bus. And it's I've only seen it twice where it was a post office lorry with a London bus and it dwarfed it. Oh, it was a great win. And I've got shots of it. And I thought, I've got loads of photographs, but I'm not sure that if you had a website of lorries being taller than buses, anyone would be into it. No, there's got to be one other person in the world like me, hasn't there? There has to be one other.
There, I think. I think lorries being taller than buses.
Yeah,
and website, yes. Yeah.
Well, why not? But I'm sorry. I know you think he's trying to cram in gags and routes. I'm not. This is the truth. I still do this. And I will even drive along with my car. And if I see a lorry coming and I know there's a double decker just coming as well, I get myself in a position and I can just get the windscreen in the right place so I can measure the two as I go past, which was the bigger.
Yes. I'm going to avoid you on the road, though,
because
I feel
dangerous.
That's...
It's not dangerous.
No, well, it sounds a bit dangerous to me.
Well, you know, I'm very, very cautious when I drive.
Yes. I wonder you drive at all. Why aren't you getting on and off double-decker buses? You love them so much.
I can't do that, can I?
Are you too famous? You get recognised.
Well, not too famous, am I? Crikey.
Oh, it's London's Burning at the front.
No, they don't. They go, look, it's Al Murray.
He probably owns his own double-decker bus.
He's got his own, anyhow. Yeah, he's bound to. But no, I have to drive a car because, of course, I live out in the sticks, so I have to drive all over the country doing gigs and whatever. So,
of course you do.
I should have a bus to do it, but it cost me a fortune.
Yeah.
Wouldn't get no eulas on that.
Do you ever fantasise about doing something like Cliff Richard did, you know, in summer holiday? You know, the
Let's go to double-decker bus and go to France.
Yes.
That's we're all going film. On a summer holiday.
Yeah. Did you ever see that film? Did you enjoy it? Do you think, they've got the right...
What?
Did they do this fitting out the bus in a way that you would do if you took over a bus, do you think?
Yes. Because people do up buses now, don't they? And they live in them. So I don't think I haven't toyed with that, especially with the current interest rates going up. Although looking at this audience, you're loving the interest rates going up because you've all got savings, haven't you? So... But
you're just saying people are old. That's what you're saying.
Speak for yourself, love. My friend Grishina Frame. She was the voice. Grishina Frame.
Lovely girl.
Grish Frame.
Yeah.
Grishina Frame was the voice behind the girl singing on that. She was actually who was singing on it, and she was at the time married to Mitch Murray. Now you know Mitch Murray.
Of course. Yes,
you know Mitch Murray.
Yeah.
Why do you do what you do to me, Billy? Don't be a hit. He wrote those songs.
Okay.
This is a crap. Yeah. Do you know what? I've played this gig about 15 times in my career, right? And I rock it.
You're going well.
I'm only joking. Yeah. I'm only joking. Go on.
Is there any more to say about double-decker buses?
No, that's about
God
it. Because you're all looking at me as if I'm crazy. But you want to know about things that I'm enjoying, I like.
Yes.
We've all got quirks, haven't we? And that's one of my little quirks. I like a double-decker bus, you know. You know. So when I was in London's Burning, I was driving the fire engines in that. Oh, that was great fun, that was. But it wasn't quite a bus. But I still got to go... And, oh, it spat on you. Sorry, Clive, I just spat on you. With me, air brake. You can keep that tax man, can't touch it. Go on anyway, sorry.
Yes, okay, double-decker bus. I think they've covered the territory.
Love double-decker buses.
Because you know
buses.
What Seven Wonders are? You do there one you and then another six come along behind. So so we're going to do...
Come on! Come on, people! Yeah. Now, someone has been working on that.
No, I just thought of that. So let's go on to your next one, which you've sort of listed, you know, they're all related things. So it's the Apple iPad, the Mac, the iPhone. So you've gone for one of the wonders of the modern world, really.
Right, so the way it works is this. I'm not a big Apple fan, right? Well, I am to a degree, but what
you've made it a wonder of the world.
I have made it a wonder of the world, but before you think I'm an Apple boy, the reason I like this equipment is being a lad who left school, I couldn't read and write, and then I taught myself to read with Mr. Men books. I learned to read like that, but my spelling is still not the best. But what these things have enabled me to do is to be able to write, and I can't make music, but I can make music on my iPad and my Mac. I can manipulate stuff that I could never do. And the other great thing about it is, whereas before, as you know, people in our generation and a business have been beholden to big companies like the BBC and whatever to be able to record stuff and whatever. So now I live in a world where I can just sit there and I do my, I've got two podcasts that I do. I do it all from home. I edit it all from home. I make everything in my house. And now I do all my voiceovers, like for TV ads and whatever. I do it all from the house. So it's all this equipment. It's incredible. Not only the fact, you can always tell someone who can't spell very well when they're texting, because now you can obviously dictate your text as well, which is brilliant, of course. So that you, someone like me will be going, text, papaya. text. Super casual, and it'll do it for me. So,
well, you could do the whole thing. Why do you do? What are you tapping?
You could do
sun?
The whole thing, but I don't want to look like. That's a good point, actually. Yeah. But I think actually, you know, I'll be honest with you. I tell you why I don't, because when you're texting or writing, you're thinking, aren't you? You're kind of going so that I wouldn't be going. So I will see you later, comma at the pub.
Yeah, no,
comma.
No, I get with you. But that's just the phone. You've mentioned all the other things, the iPad. So you like, and you can type. And
the thing about the iPad
is... It auto-corrects, spell checks.
It's not just that. The great thing about the iPad, when I started doing comedy, I use a lot of musical cues. And, you know, I'm one of those comics that starts with a song and ends with a song. You know, right. I'm a very traditional, but very out there sort of kind of comic, I suppose. But what I love about the iPad is that I can do and write music and do music on it. And also then when I do my act, I have it on stage with me and I cue all my cues off it. So whereas before I had it on little tapes, so I'd have to sort of get the tape with a little drawing of a line and get the sound guy to go click as I said a word, click. So now everything's, it's just brilliant.
It sounds like you're really on top of things. It's a
totally brilliant thing. And also, you know, with a lot of young comedians now, they don't come on here anymore and do gags. You know, their whole thing is, you know.
Yeah.
But there is a flip side to that, of course. You know, my 16-year-old is constantly walking around with it in his face. You know, that's the bad side to it. You know, I'm constantly saying, put it down for a minute, you know, TikTok and all that.
But in fact, you're only scratching the surface of things, because you can do your email. You can be in contact with the Smithsonian Library in Washington to get a fact.
It's unbelievable.
You've got the computer power that could take you to the moon and back in your pocket.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, it will be our downfall. There's no doubt about that for me. I think that technology will be the it's going to pick us apart.
Yes.
It already is.
They're going to take over the
I don't know about that AI and all that. AI has been around for years. I mean, anyone who plays like FIFA, for goodness sake, you know, you've been playing against an AI for donkeys. You know, I'm not too worried about that. I just think that, you know, the way we all put our money now, if you look at, when Russia invaded, what happened with MasterCard and Visa? They just shut the Russian people down. I mean, where's that? So all of a sudden they just turned their money off. I mean, what? So it's kind of scary in that way, I think. But in a productive way.
Well, that's the way that's supposed to work is that nobody wants to start wars because you don't want to be suddenly locked out of the economic system.
No,
but it hasn't seemed to have worked with Putin.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. But the fact that they can do that to any of us, we could all just be you could just turn your card off and that's it. You're finished.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do, we'll turn you off kind of thing. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm really digging into the conspiracy back here, but I think some of you are kind of going, you might be right, actually. But for me as a performer and me as someone who creates, like I do my Bear With Me podcast and I do a football podcast with Jonathan Pearce, we have all our guests remotely. So it's incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll have Terry Butcher on and Terry's in his house. Well, I'm in my house and Jonathan's in his house. And then, of course, like with Bear With Me, which is here we go. You thought double decades were crazy. So this podcast is about a guy called Ed, and he lives with his friend. He's a bear who he found on the beach, but he's a man dressed as a bear in a man costume dressed in a bear costume, but we don't know. I don't even know. I write it. Mm. And they live down Turkey Cock Lane, which is a real place near Fingering Hoe, which is a real place in Colchester. these are real places. So
I know, but you've selected them particularly.
Of course I did, yes. Because
it's a
silly cartoon comedy thing.
Yes.
So they live in Turkey Cock Lane in Turkey Cock Cottage. And next door is Wally. He's like a little beekeeper man. You know what I mean? He's got bees. And the bear's always trying to get in the bees. And then on the other side, you've got Martin Perlman. He's a lovely man. And his wife is taxidermied and he pulls her around on wheels.
Okay.
And
I feel we've strayed into a different podcast now. I don't.
But the point being is, I'm going to come to a point. I type it on my iPad, right? Yeah. I then sit in my little studio and I make all the music. I do all the Foley. So then I go out on my iPhone and my iPad with drills and stuff. So the bear might be going, oh, I'm just putting up a sign. Yeah. Right. You know, so I make everything, every single thing, the music, and I can't do music, but I love music and I put music in. I do all the Foley, the sound effects. I do all the voices. I do all the writing, but it's all done with all of that. So that's why it's one of my wonders of the world.
Well, no, I think it's an absolutely a brilliant wonder to include, because I like it when people just have sentimental things or just things they happen to like. But it is recognizing the fact that these extraordinary things you can do. I only really appreciate it when it doesn't work. And you know, I clicked on the icon before. Oh, it hasn't worked this time. I have no idea. Why is this not working? What is an icon?
Yeah.
When I click on it, who does what? Is somebody in California getting a phone call? How is it? I have no idea. I have to admit my ignorance, and I can operate it perfectly happily till it goes wrong, and I realize what is going on.
It's a silicon
chip. Okay, it's a silicon chip. What's a silicon chip? Why has it got all the knowledge of the world on it? Who put it there?
Well,
how does it get in there?
What about hard drive? They always freak me out. That's the one thing in the world you can fill up that doesn't get any heavier, does it? You know. So that's for me, for a boy who was told that he's going to amount to nothing, and having teachers, not all, some were very supportive, but some's just going, you're stupid, get out. And then I was, because I couldn't read and write, so of course I'm dumb. But you know, for someone now who's gone on and I've done, you know, several Radio 4 shows, and
I've written them, but why was that at school? You couldn't read and write. Were you not connecting with you?
No, more the fact that my brain is slightly wired differently, I think, and I just don't do well with figures and words and what have you. I'd love to be brilliant at maths, but it's just something I can't. You know, it's just the way I am, I think.
I mean, we might come on to that later, but for one of your wonders. But okay, so you Apple and its various products, but I suppose there are rival products as well.
You could do PCs, but it's just something's happened. The Apple, for me, the way it all works together for me as a creative, the only thing that doesn't make any sense is it's mainly in the people that are into that equipment, especially like the iPad, that they took all the solid state out of it, you know, connecting by wire, and now it's all wireless. Anyone who knows in this business that we're doing now, or in musical business, you want to be hardwired. You two speak to any sound person, they want to be clicked in.
It's extraordinary how rapidly these things have happened, though.
Unbelievable. Yeah. 2007, that was, you know, that iPhone came out. And just before that, the LG Chocolate had come out, you see. That was the first kind of touch phone that... Because Apple always look at something else and go, actually, we can make that better.
Yes.
And that's what happens with Jobs, when he saw the mouse coming out of a Xerox machine. It was a photocopier. And he went, I can make that much better than that. And that's how it happened.
Right. Well, I remember when this sort of thing, in the very early days, I had an Amstrad. You remember an Amstrad that Lord Sugar made personally?
Yeah.
And it was connected with some funny little wire and a little printer, which sort of, and that was fantastic. I enjoyed that a lot. But then I had a conversation with a friend of mine. In fact, he's no longer alive. Douglas Adams, who wrote all the Hitchhiker's Guide thing. I said, I think I'm going to need to upgrade this little Amstrad, 300 quid. And he said, oh, and he gave me a list of things that I should get. And it came to £10,000.
Wow.
I said, hang on, Douglas. Is that worth it? Am I going to get better printing quality out of this? Oh, there's no printer yet. We haven't got to the printer yet. That's another 1,000 quid. And then you think, oh, this is a ridiculous amount of money. But everyone gets used to it. And the people, you know, the business is built around the idea that you have to get something like that. It's supposed to be saving you money. But when do you ever get that money back when you invest in
it's
out of date within 3 years.
Well, but it's horses for courses, isn't it? But just on that very quickly, Cubase was one of the first programs to come out on Amstrad. So musicians all had those.
Yes.
Because Cubase is a good recording.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's a beep, bop, bop, bop.
But it hardly did anything, but it was still a wonderful advance for its day.
It was a move on from the Vic 20 and the Amstrad ZX Spectrum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, so you've put a real-life wonder of the world. So number three,
go on,
is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, the Tom Stoppard play.
Yeah.
Presume you've been in it, as otherwise you
would. 2004, I was asked by this guy Ian to, would I come over and do this play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, and I rang up my friend Sam Callis, who I mentioned earlier, Saka Bakar, and... I said, do you know this play, Rosencrantz and something? And he went, yeah, what about it? And I went, I've been asked to do it. He went, do it.
Yes.
Right? So anyway, I had a meeting with this Ian, and they just had redone the Royal Opera House in Jersey, which is beautiful theatre. And he said about this play, so I'd obviously then looked it up and whatever you knew all about it. And he said, I want you to do it with another comedian. So who would you like to do it with? And I thought, well, a lot of the circuit kind of comedians that I work with, I thought they're not going to be, it's not going to be their thing. And I wasn't sure that I wanted to spend a lot of time with some people, if that makes sense, not being rude. So then I thought, I know.
I didn't get the call. So I
Clive, you're a bit before my time.
When were you doing this play?
In Jersey.
No, when?
Oh, sorry, it's 2004.
Yeah. Okay, so, I may be before your time, but I was alive in 2004.
I know. Yeah. But I don't think we were that tight at that time, Clive. Anyway, so what I did is I got I rang Joe Pasquale and said, you want to do this? And he went, yeah. He said, what is it, love? What is it, love? What is it? I said, it's a play. He went, oh, it's a play. What is it? I said, it's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Oh, what's it about, love? What's it about? And I said, well, you'll have to kind of read it. Now, if people know the piece, it's quite a piece. And it's usually a lot of students will do that at university.
Yeah, I did it at university.
Of course you did.
Yes, of course I did. I was Guildenstern. Were you?
No, I was Rosencrantz.
Oh, well, there. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of difference.
And Joe was Guildenstern.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
Joe was phenomenal.
Yeah. You know,
forget all that. I got something that would get on your nerves. Forget all that. No, he went really straight, mate. It was really unbelievable, you know. Mm. Like, you know, it was like, what is death?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a bag of secondhand clothes, you know. And it was wonderful to do. And of course, you know, at the beginning, you're flicking the coin heads. Well, we did the first night, and it was a wonderful set they put out. And it was lovely. It was beautiful. And so I'm flicking these great big old-fashioned coins. And as I flick it and it falls, it went straight in the groove and just sat up on the first night like that.
Yeah.
And I had a kick out of them heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was what was brilliant about the play for me. I was going through a massive transition as a comedian. I was actually quite a mainstream comic. I go, you know, it's like when you're on a plane. You know, that was the kind of thing I did, and I never wanted to be that. I wanted to be more like, I was sort of being pushed towards that sort of Barrymore Saturday Night thing when I ended up doing all these shows with Lulu, and I did loads of stuff. You won't even remember me, but I kind of...
Did you do with Lulu? What was
I did a show called... It was a lottery show called Red Alert, but we called it Red A Nightmare. It was terrible. So I'd had this kind of... I had a lot of telly. I was doing loads of stuff. And I didn't look anything like I do now. I had a bit of hair and whatever. But I was being pushed up this route, and I didn't want to be up this route. And all of a sudden, you know how someone else comes in in charge of whatever it was, the BBC at the time, and they go, no, I'm not digging you. So Salmon went out.
Yeah.
Lorraine Heggersy came in, and that was into me kind of thing.
All right.
So I went to a place, and then I thought, you know what? I'm going to reinvent myself and do what I wanted to do, because I was a massive fan of Milligan and Sellers and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was doing this mainstream kind of... So in 2006, I started doing this thing. If you've ever seen Matt, you probably haven't, but I turn and talk to two inner voices. It's like a bit like a drama triangle going on. So it's me with me and the other two. And...
Is that a devil and an angel?
No, not really. Yeah. It's not. No, it's just they're talking to me now. But
are they telling you to leave?
They're telling me not to explain them. But what it is about the thing about Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. There's always this debate, are they dead or alive? In my opinion, they're not either. They're not dead or alive. It's complete nonsense that. They're just two bit players in Hamlet that are standing behind a curtain that every night, every time Hamlet starts to be played, they kind of come alive again. And they're like, what are we doing? They can never make head nor tail of it, yeah. Okay? But the great thing about it is you can kind of break the fourth wall, which for people who don't understand theatre, you have to, obviously the back wall, the two side walls, as you three and the four, as you, me looking out now at you guys in the auditorium. That's the fourth wall. And the thing about that is you can speak to audience members. They think you're talking to them, but actually I'm talking to Joe, and then we carry on the piece.
Yes.
And the other thing about it, what really amazed me is how you can stop.
Mm. Like that. Yes.
And hold it. And then people don't like it, you know. But then you pick it up again and everyone's like relieved. And I thought, that's how I want to do my comedy. I want to take people on a journey where they're going, I don't want to go down here. And then you pull it back and you relieve them and they go, oh, thank goodness for that. And then you knock them back to where they thought they were going to be, you know.
This is very interesting about your comedy, but I don't want to just pass by as well the fact that you mentioned you couldn't read or write at school. Now you're talking about being in TV. And Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, there's a lot of words. It's a very wordy
play. Yeah, it is, but I taught myself.
Can you read, or do you learn words in another way?
I learn words in another way, but the point being was I wasn't just going to lay down and go, right, okay, I'm stupid. I like performing, and I'm one of those people that will go, you know, I'll be honest with you, I watched my dad work his ass off, excuse my language. You know, my dad would get up, like everyone else's, but my dad would get up at 6, he'd go out in his van, I'd be excited to see him pull in at 6:30, 7 o'clock, he'd come home, have a shower, put his tracksuit on, have his dinner, fall asleep. That was me and my dad. And I love him for it. And I will always love him for doing that. But I just thought, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to do that.
No.
I want to play, you know, and I'll learn and do things that I can to do what I want to do. And since the age of 18, I've been doing comedy and I've done all right out of it. I may not be at the heights that I would like to be at, but I do know that I've got a really lovely respect.
And you don't regard it so much as work? Because there's plenty of fun in doing
totally
it.
Totally blessed.
Yes. Yeah.
We're both sitting on this stage. We both know what it's like. We're totally and utterly blessed. Someone looked down on me and it's wonderful where I've been and what I've done. And to be able to do things like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, which is just an amazing piece. And to be able to do all these things and just be that guy. And it wasn't a revenge thing. There was no point in me thinking, right, okay, I'll show you teachers. There might be a bit of that, but...
Yeah.
You know, I thought, no, I'm going to do this. And I remember Fame being on, the programme Fame, and I thought, that's it, I'm going to live forever. And I thought, that's it. And, you know, and I used to... my mum's very into show business, and she was always into, Her Majesty's on Sunday and all that, and the Life on the Palladium. And I remember she'd be going, Bobby Davros on, Bobby Davros on, because I love doing impressions and stuff. So I'd be like, straight down the stairs. And, Mike Yardwood's on, So that was the grounding of it. And then to end up doing that play. And for
this is in Jersey as well. So that's a very pleasant place to go and visit.
Beautiful. It was
Joe Pasquale.
It was with Joe, and it was a superb cast. Yeah. And
there's a player King as well as important.
The King, and of course, when the King comes on, you know, it's a Jersey crowd. So there's a bit where they get interrupted by the King, and the King would walk on and go, "How now?" And someone would always shout out, "Brown Cow," of course. Yeah. But it was always, there's a nice bit in that bit where the, I think it's the player comes out and says, "What do you think we want? Jokes?" You know, and it was lovely just every night for me and Joe to just turn to the audience because we're comedians, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, but Joe Pasquale was, I don't know what people think of Joe, but not only is he's a lot more fantastic than you realize, you know, I've never seen anyone blow a room away like Joe does.
Yeah.
You know, because you think he's just a silly voice bloke, but see him live, you know, how business is like, he's snobby, but he was particularly phenomenal. Phenomenal in that play.
Did you try and outdo each other in
No.
Did you get to meet Tom Stoppard?
No, we didn't, sadly. I would like to have done that.
He would have fancied a trip to Jersey, surely.
Well, you see, there was talk of him coming over to watch it, but he never came. But I was going to say something about Joe. Oh, this is the only time I've ever seen Joe get angry as well, because we were sitting in these little digs. And you imagine Joe Pasquale getting angry. It's quite terrifying.
Does his voice go up an octave when he gets angry?
Well, we've grown beards. We've grown all our hair out and everything.
Right.
And the lines in that, but it's very chop and, you know, it's 1 minute you're talking about something else and you go, hold on, I heard drums. You know, you take in the audience going, what?
you know, and that's kind of, like I said, how I styled my act, really. But I remember coming in and just having a laugh with Joe, and he just lost it. He just put his foot down, and I'm not going to use expletives, but he was like, take love. He said, I can't do this. It's got to stop mucking around, right? Stops now, love, right?
And I was like, all right. Do you want a cup of tea?
Yeah, I'll have a cup of tea.
But it's very funny seeing Joe get angry. But he doesn't get angry, that's why it's a funny.
Well, I'm going to get angry if we don't get through these wonders of the world. So we've got to get on to the next
go
one,
on,
which
go
is
on.
The.
Sorry.
No, I'm not. There's nothing to apologise for. I'm just saying we have to move on. I'm apologising for interrupting your reminiscences.
I just wanted it to be
go
enjoyable.
On to some different reminiscences. Okay. So your next wonder of the world is The Dark Side of the Moon,
yeah.
Which is the Pink Floyd album, you usefully note, rather than the actual Dark Side of the Moon.
Yes,
so,
I did.
So tell us why you've selected that. 1973, well, that came out, I think.
Right, yeah. Correct. My dad would listen to that over and over and over again. So I remember my dad would put the record on, which is still brilliant to listen to it on vinyl, to be fair, with all the cracks and blips. And my dad, I remember me and my mate James would always sit there. My dad would have it full blast on those. You remember those great big headphones with the big whirly, sort of cable that went in with the great big, you know... And he'd sit there and he'd have it, you could hear it with him with the headphones on. That's how loud it was. And me and my mate James used to think it was funny to ask him terrible questions, you know, because he was so into the music, he just wanted to go yes to everything. So we'd ask him something ridiculous, like going, do you like eating rotten eggs? And he'd be going,
yeah.
But the point behind that, and also that was the other thing when my dad was out, because he goes goody goody bullshit, doesn't he? I used to try and find that one bit so we'd laugh because there was swearing on a record. Yeah. But, the reason I went on to love that album is because then I grew, you know, obviously, and matured. And then you go back to something, don't you?
Yeah.
You go. It's like actually, you know, the first time you have sex with your very first girlfriend, isn't it? And then like years later on, you want to do it again with her because you want to prove that actually you're better now, right?
Yeah,
that's a terrible simile.
That's not a great chat up line.
No, it's
even
with
a.
But you remember
30 years ago, I was
young. Do
you
remember when we had sex and I wasn't very good?
Yeah,
I've learned a few things now. But what?
Well, so
what,
have I. Get up.
Has it grown? No, it hasn't. So what was interesting about the album is, if anyone, it's one of those brilliant albums that you love it when you say to someone, have you never heard it? And they go, no. And you're like, oh my goodness.
You get it out,
it's
yeah.
like, it's all with Nail and Eyes like that for me as well. When someone goes, never seen with Nail and Eyes, you go, oh my God.
You've got something to look forward to.
Because, you know, I figure in life, you're either a with Nailer or you're not a with Nailer or you've never seen with Nail, you know. But if you don't get it, then you're probably not going to get me. But this guy down here knows exactly what I'm on about. Yeah. But Dark Side of the Moon for me is not just, it's a brilliant concept album and it's this great journey and it's this mad trip that you can go on. It's also, it's just brilliant for everything. Driving, if I can't sleep and I'm suffering terribly from anxiety, I put that album on. That and Tony Hancock get me off.
Oh, yes.
All the time to sleep.
Oh, you could have had Tony Hancock as a wonder of the world.
Well, Tony Hancock is a wonder of the world,
yes,
but I know I could go on about...
Yeah. But Dark Side of the Moon, it's got that track Money on it, which is ironically...
But you know
is
the,
about is sort of criticising money, but that's they made more money out of that one track.
That's all Roger Waters is, isn't it? I mean, he's constantly out there going, yeah, like that, and you're going, you're probably just making, how much are you getting for this concert? But we don't know. We can't, he might give all his money
away.
Well,
Roger Waters, who knows to make sense of him at the moment? He's, you know, they've split up, the band has split
up, and he
does these, you know, things in uniforms.
He does his own, he's on his last tour again, isn't he? But I think if you listen to Nick, Nick, you know, the drummer.
Nick Mason, yeah.
Nick. I was trying to do the joke again. Nick Ma.
Oh, well. Odd enough, I do know Nick Mason.
Nick Mason.
He's done one of these Wonders of the World. So,
has he? He was going on about the fact that, you know, he was sick and tired that these old two men have waited all this time, you know, that they're arguing because he thinks he's Mr. Pink Floyd and he writes the lyrics and just because he does all that, you know. And he's saying, we could have been playing all this time. You know, we could have been playing all this wonderful music together instead of you two just banging heads together, you know.
Yeah. But that's the way of... rock bands, pop groups, all the they often come together, then they fall apart. Nick Mason is the still quiet voice of calm. Oddly enough, for a drummer, he is the calmest one in the entire.
Yeah, but then
setup.
Of course Richard's gone, hasn't he? Which is sad.
Yes,
but so we'll never be
and
now.
Sid Barrett went, and you know, there's all these various, you know, things, and there's arguments going. There's Nick Mason, especially the wild man on the drums, is actually the most sensible.
Just going back to Money quickly and drums. Money is the one song actually because.
it's a real bass song, that is. It's a song for the bass guitar, and I don't know if anyone's really ever noticed this. If you listen to Dark Side of the Moon, and I've listened to it so many times, you just pick one instrument through it, right? And Money, if you can be bothered, right, get it on your headphones and listen to Money, but concentrate on the bass, because the bass is just amazing in that, because
bass guitars are underrated.
They are underrated, but it's such a bass song, because it's boom, and you hear, and you really listen, because you've got either side, you've got Richard Wright giving out, blop, you know, if you listen to our headphones, and then you've got Dave giving it a little one up there, but the bass is going, anyway, listen to it, and you'll see
what
I'm
about. Okay, so you like the album, but the perhaps the explanation why it's perhaps a little bit earlier in your life than you'd expect to be your era, it's because of your association with your father liking it.
Yes, it's with my dad. My dad was a massive Shirley Bassey fan, and of course I love Shirley Bassey as well, because, you know, and so on and so forth. But the thing about that album is, when I did Radio 4 shows, when we first sat down to say, my producer Richard Melvin said, you know, how do you see this being put together? I said, well, Dark Side of the Moon. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, that's what I want it to be. I want my show to be edited in this confusion, you know, that people go, I've got to listen to that again. What has gone on there? You know, and that's kind of how I wanted it to be.
You didn't want a big light show on Radio 4.
No, not a big light show. So that's what I did. Right. And that's why I love that. I love that album. I love the band.
I'm going to have to force the pace, though, because we've got...
Force the pace.
Force
it, baby.
An orchestra is your fifth one. An orchestra.
Orchestras, to me, I said earlier on about maths, you know, it's the closest thing you'll get to seeing in an equation, right? It's the earliest form of digital, you know, on off 1 1 0, you know. It's like a form of maths to me, you know. And when I watch stand-up comedy, you know, I probably go, oh, that's good. I like the way you've done that. Yeah, it's clever how you've done it. I watch some acting and I go, I can see you acting. It's a bit like Judi Dench says, you know, what's the worst thing about watching an actor when I can see them acting, you know? And it's hard when you're on this side of the fence because you're going, all right. But with an orchestra, you see, you'll sit there and you'll just go, wow, wow, wow. It's not even to like a 10 millionths of a second together. They're together. Yeah. There is no space. There's no cigarette paper that can be put in. It's
how
together.
Do they do it?
Is it's that unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. And you've got like maybe Rutter at the front banging away like this, you know. Yeah. And then they bring in the choir, you know, and then it just never ceases to amaze me. And I love watching the oboe, because the oboe inevitably always sits in the middle right opposite the conductor. And you know when it's coming because the big frog cheeks come, don't they? They've got these great big frog cheeks and loads of spittle on the floor out of the end of their pipe. But it's
so
just,
would you like to play in an orchestra?
I couldn't do it.
No, but if you could... would it be an oboe? Would it be a violin, first violin, or the timpani at the back?
I think I'd just be the bloke who just gets up now and again and goes... and then sits back down again.
Yes.
You know, a bit of percussion. But what I was saying about, you know, about comics and watching actors and all that, that is the one thing in the world when I watch, and I could never do it, and I don't know how they do it. Of course I know how they do it, but, you know, the movement on a bow, just a certain amount on a certain move up the string on a violin, for example, is so amazing that then you've got 10 other people doing the same thing together, whilst then the horns will pop up and go, you know, and you're like, how are you all doing this? Yes. It's just, it's never ceases. And I'm the guy as well, especially if I go to like the Royal Albert Hall, you know, I'm the guy, you know, when a piece finishes, you know, it's the done thing. You don't clap, do you? I can't help going like, and there's always someone behind me going, you don't clap here. And I'm going, I want to clap though.
It's odd, isn't it? It's end of a movement. You're not supposed to clap.
Well, what's the point of that rule? Problem with it. There's a kind of a little bit of a snobbery towards it when you're in the audience. There's a kind of like, no, that's not. There's a certain etiquette, and you're like, oh, I just want to applaud, man. I'm in awe of the whole thing, you know. So the orchestra just absolutely blows my mind. Blows my mind.
But your way of capturing music is using an iPad.
I'll sample something or bring it out and I can manipulate it through using the tech. Correct. Yeah. But I'm never going to get to that. You know, when you listen to a bit of chopping, you know what I mean? I remember listening to Chopin once and I thought I had to turn it off, right? Because my mind's, you know, we're probably going to come to that. But I had to turn it off because not only someone had written that, and there was now someone else doing it as well. And if you listen to Chopin, really listen, it's incredible what is going on.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And that's the other thing. I love Sergei Rachmaninoff as well. But I didn't realize that he's so hard to play, isn't he? Because he had enormous hands. Mm. That's why. So that's why when people go, it's like a bit tough. It's a bit of a tough to play.
Or
Sergio.
What about someone like Beethoven, late period Beethoven, he's composing and he can't hear.
That's he might be a bit moody, mightn't he? You know what I mean? it's funny. A lot of grand stuff. I like Beethoven. Of course, I like Beethoven. But some of it, you know, I'm not so much into the big grander stuff.
Right.
You know.
More delicate stuff.
Big sort of bam, 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 you know, pomp and ceremony, circumstance, that kind of thing's not really my bag.
So not Wagner, you wouldn't go and...
The Jew inside me's going, well, I don't know about Wagner, mate, you know what I mean? But I've got a bit in me. Well, my man was Sadie Nathan, you work it out, right?
Yeah, okay.
Wagner's brilliant. And that brilliant episode of Kirby Enthusiasm when he keeps singing, he keeps whistling Wagner, doesn't he? And all the Jews around him are getting really annoyed.
Well, yeah. I didn't say that to be broken. I'm just exploring, you know, Tchaikovsky.
Bits of Tchaikovsky. The Swan Lake and whatever. And of course, you know, and the Holst, the planet as well. And
Well, let's not dwell on Tchaikovsky's. Patriotic Russian music for the moment. It's not quite as fashionable as at the moment.
I think he'd be disgusted.
All right, so an orchestra. Number six, we might take quickly because it's the internet, because we've kind of covered the tech in Apple iPad, Mac and iPhone. But the internet, again, you have certainly put your finger on a wonder of the world.
I take it as a utopia rather than a dystopia because... He has got the dark side of it. Of course it has, as so has the moon. See what I did? One quick thing on Dark Side of the Moon as well. If you know the album, right, if at the very end, you just quickly, Clive, sorry, if you turn it up really loud, you know you can hear the guy go, there is no dark side of the moon, it's all dark, right? But if you listen really carefully, you can hear another piece of music being played.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if it's doobla-dee, doobla-da, ho-ho, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And what it was... The Beatles were recording next door.
Oh, no.
And they picked it up. So you've really got... You like this, don't you? You've got to whack it right up. So get it to Dark Side of the Moon, then turn it as full as you can.
And if you and just get you can hear it going, you bang, can, bang, you, bang. No. Keep it down, boys. We're trying to record Dark Side of the Moon over here.
What are you doing in there, lads?
Yeah.
No, you can just hear... I don't think it's double D, double D. I'm not sure what it is, but you can just hear it. But it's definitely a Beatles song. Oh, sorry, I spat again, didn't I? But because the voices that go, you know, why do I care about dying? You know, that was originally going to be Paul McCartney and the Beatles doing that.
Oh, really?
But they used the roadies instead. But anyway, sorry, yes. The internet is where you get information like that I've just told you.
Yes. Some of it more reliable than others.
Yes. There you go. You see, so the great thing about the internet, it's full of information. You know, I could be watching football, match of the day or something like that, and I'd be thinking, where did he used to play? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's where he used to play. You know, so there's that magic to it. But equally what you just said, you know, we are now living in that brilliant Trump thing where he goes, fake news. Mm. And you're going, you created something brilliant here, haven't you, mate? Because... Yeah. You know what is real now. You know, you see what he's done there.
That's in the political, and that's interesting. Yes, but it's still the amount of information which is now at your fingertips.
Correct.
That would have taken, you'd have to get on a double decker bus to go to a reference library to get the information tomorrow morning rather than it's 3 a.m. I need that now, and you've got it.
Correct. And the other thing about the internet, of course, because in its own right, it's become a kind of a little bit of a. What's the word? Not a corporate. What's the word when something is, you know, like a product? It's become a product.
Commercialized. Monetized.
But my point being, if a certain station, TV station, says something, you're generally going to go, well, if the BBC is saying it, then it's obviously right. Well, that's the problem with the internet. Well, if it's on the internet, you know, some of us are going, well, you're not silly. A lot of people, but there are a lot of people, sheeple, you know, who go, oh, well, that's true, isn't it? It's true. And you go, I don't know if it is. So,
or does anybody have any control on what can be advertised on Instagram or something?
Well, Mary Whitehouse, can you imagine her now? She'd be, she must be spinning, mustn't she, that poor old lady? She'd be going bunkos.
She's saying, I told you what was going to happen.
She would have said, I told you.
Yes, yeah.
So there is no, but you know.
You had let Grange Hill on the telly, it was all bets were off and standards dropped.
Correct.
Yeah.
But there's no control over that now. And, But as a thing that it is for expressing and growing, it's quite brilliant. But equally, that's what I was saying, is it a dystopia or anyway, it doesn't matter.
All right, now your
dystopia.
Yeah, Your last wonder of the world is your wonky mind.
Yeah, my wonky mind.
Your mind is a wonder of the world.
My mind for me is a wonder of my
Fair
world.
Enough.
And I thought that the point of this podcast was it was about you. So I would have picked other things, of course.
Yeah.
I would have picked the joys of childbirth. Right?
Yeah.
But for me personally, I have a mind that you're probably already sitting there worked out thinking that he's got a job living with himself, that chap. But I'm quite pleased. I live with a certain personality disorders, and I live with me and everyone else in here. But I don't want rid of them because I like what I do, and sometimes I'm misunderstood when all I'm actually trying to do is make people laugh, really, you know, or not make people. I hate that when people say that. I'm going to try and make you laugh. Go on then. So you know, I'm pleased that I have this mind, and what I do love about my mind, and it's all right to love something about yourself, isn't it? Because we spend our lives, don't we, being so you got to love yourself. Mm. If you can't love yourself, and as soon as you come out in public and go, I love my mind, you go, oh. Do you? Yeah, look at you. So when you're kids and that you got children and they go, now come on, let Thomas play with that as well. No, come on. And the kid's crying because he doesn't want to play with the train. Let them play together. And then they all grow up and try and take each other's countries. But the thing about my wonky mind is what I love about, and I was saying about the podcast that I did, the Bear With Me and all that, and it all comes out of this weird place. But I'm luckily one of those people that can go, right, I'm going to do it now. And I get up, whether it be paint a fence or paint my barn, which I did recently, or whatever, I do it. And then I step back and go, how did that happen? And especially creatively, you know, all the Bear With Me. If you do listen to Bear With Me, you've got to stick with the first two, right? Because you'll be going, what is going on? And then you'll get it if you do, right? But, you know, I write it, I record it, and then it's done. And I edit it, and I enter this kind of like state of complete maniac, really.
You're in the flow.
Totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mind will go, keep going at it. And then I come out of it and I look back and then I listen to it or what anything I've done. And I go, oh my God, where did that come from? So
that doesn't sound that wonky. That sounds like you've got a creative mind.
Well, it's creative, but it also destroys me as well.
Yeah.
It attacks me a lot. So I have to attack it back. That's why I've got me ping banned.
Right.
So I got.
If you snap that and that you no longer have it, what? Hell
break.
You suddenly become Frankenstein's monster or something.
I've got hundreds of these, mate.
Yeah.
So basically, for the people listening, I've got a band on my wrist. So when I get a bad thought, any bad thought, I just ping it and it goes. It's great. I think smokers do it, actually. I'm not sure, but.
What if your thought is, I must strangle somebody with an elastic band?
Those bloody postmen throwing numbers on my ground again. Yeah.
Well, any other aspects of your mind that we need to know about? Because it doesn't sound...
It's not a dangerous mind. It's not a lunacy mind. It's just sometimes I have to pull it back and go, what are you doing? And then it'll have a go at me and I'll go, well, I didn't mean that. You know, I think I've got a very, very strong... I've weathered it, you know, over the years, you know, because I've suddenly realised I was the way I was. And then... Because I could tell the way people were and how they would speak around me. You know, people would talk... I'm one of those people that people talk about and I am here, you know. Like a child, you know. So I know where I'm at, and I know who I am. But I also know that I have to deal with quite a lot of things.
Well, I know where I'm at, which is at the end of this podcast.
That's a shame.
I'm afraid. Thank you very much, Terry, for sharing your thoughts. I appreciate we could have done just two wonders, and we could have made at least a double length podcast with just two of them.
Well, that's quite a compliment, isn't it?
But I forced you to do the seven. I have to now select the wonder of wonders, the one that I reckon on your explanation. And any one of these would do. But for sheer naked self-interest, because it would be just so great to get Tom Stoppard to do one of these podcasts. Yeah. I'm going to say, and I was in the play myself, and I have very unhappy memory. The play was fine, but I had a very big problem with my teeth, a tooth at the time from a car accident. So I'm going to put Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead as your wonder of wonders.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, okay. So... Thank you very much for sharing us that for Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and all the other ones. Terry Alderton.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.